down the road, you'd be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than the ones you did. So dream, explore, say yes to life. Be inspired to live life as an exciting adventure of discovery. You are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, and I'm your host, Mark Susnell. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that hopefully will inspire you to think differently, to do things that perhaps you put on the back burner or maybe haven't even thought about before. And each week I invite various individuals that I consider cutting-edge thought leaders to share their vision, their wisdom. And today's guest is Warren Farrell. He's a co-author with John Gray of the book The Boy Crisis. And he's also been chosen by the Financial Times as one of the world's top 100 thought leaders. His books are published in over 50 countries, 20 languages, and they include two award-winning international bestsellers, Why Men Are the Way They Are, plus The Myth of Male Power. His books are also contribute to different disciplines and different communication styles, and he's also been interviewed many, many times. He's appeared on more than 1,000 TV and radio shows, been interviewed by Oprah, Barbara Walters, Peter Jennings, Larry King, Charlie Rose, Katie Couric, by many others, and I'm honored to have him on our show today. So welcome, Warren Farrell, to the Inspire Possibility Show. I'm looking forward to learning, you know, about the boy crisis and your work. And so,
well, thank you. I'm just going to write down your full name. Thank you. I'm just writing down your full name so I can add you to Katie Couric. Let's see, Mark Susnow. All right.
All right.
Mark Susnow on my
list. Perfect. There you go. Yeah, so I was excited to hear about you and through some mutual friends, and that kind of got me to reach out to you and to find out more about what you do and the work that you do. And I've a couple of interesting things is that I noticed is that GQ magazine in 2015 called you the Martin Luther King of the men's movement. That's quite a compliment. Huge compliment.
I felt good about that. Certainly, Martin Luther King is certainly a person who's made enormous contributions of intellect and activism. And while I don't hold that level of recognizability, I hope I have at least strived in that direction.
And what really was behind that? What really led up to that acknowledgement? What were you? What was the work you were doing in the men's movement?
Well, what led up to that was many years of involvement in the women's movement. I was on the board of directors of the National Organization for Women in New York City for 3 years, and then spoke all around the world on the importance of women's issues. And then as divorces started occurring in large numbers, I started noticing that boys and girls were not being raised nearly as often by their fathers. And as the data started rolling in on this in the 80s and 90s, I began to see that all around the world in the 63 largest developed nations, where developed nations were significant because they allowed for permission for divorce, and where the boys and girls were being brought up without significant father involvement, that's where the problems were really occurring. But because the boys without a father didn't have a role model of the same gender, they were having many more problems than the girls were. At least the girls had a female role model to help guide them through the process of becoming a woman. And so there was an increase. As I started seeing that boys were falling so far behind, committing suicide more often, that 93% of our prison populations were boys and men. They were dropping out of school at much higher rates, being unemployed in their 20s at much higher rates, especially if they dropped out of school. And about 60 or 70 other things were happening to what I call dad-deprived boys. And I started to begin to see these things and realize that this was, we had let the pendulum swing so far that we are focused on women's and girls' issues. Completely missed our focus on boys and men's, what was happening with boys and men. And so I began to think more about that and write more about that. And I spent 11 years researching the Boy Crisis book that John Gray co-authored, and he had just been amassing enormous amounts of information on ADHD and solutions to ADHD that did not involve drugs. And so we put our heads together, and he wrote the 5 chapters on ADHD solutions, and I wrote the rest of the book on the boy crisis.
Wow. So here we are. So what
so here we
interesting,
are.
Here we are, exactly. I know that I've been myself, I did a men's workshop in the 80s called Men, Sex, and Power. I think it was just beginning, and there was another corollary was Women, Sex, and Power, to really look at, what it is to be a man and what it is to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because I grew up without a father, and that's why, in a way, I was always kind of interested in this work. My father died when I was 6 years old, so I never really...
Oh, my.
And then I had kind of surrogate parents, but I never really had a role model. I mean, I had various surrogate parents, like an uncle and a stepdad, but I always felt kind of left out. Like I wasn't,
yes.
I think that was why I wanted to be a dad myself. That was really a motivator for me to.
And so, are you a dad now?
Yeah, it's one of the. I have 3 children, and they're adult children now. But it's just something that I'm, and I was also with a woman who, before, didn't want to have children,
mm-hmm.
and that's just there were lots of women that just said, I don't really want to have children. I was with a woman for a while, and she was clear she didn't want to have children. And we moved on, and then I met a woman who actually was a nurse and wanted to be a midwife. And so we had our kids and had them at home, the whole thing. But I've always have been in this question. And it's interesting because also in little research I did is another factor with the male role models is that something I didn't really think about. My younger daughter's a teacher now, an elementary teacher, but the information I gleaned here is that in terms of elementary school teachers, that only 15% of them are males.
Yes, absolutely. And the problem of 15% of the elementary school teachers being male and 85% being female is that many boys go from mom-dominated homes, single-mom homes, to female-dominated elementary schools. And so particularly in the inner cities, oftentimes these boys don't have a constructive role model until and become very vulnerable to the authoritarian personalities of a drug dealer or the authoritarian personalities of a gang leader to give them some sense of false stability and have their testosterone be channeled not constructively like a dad would do, but destructively like a gang leader or a drug leader would do. Or a drug dealer would do. And so that is, one of the many reasons why, boys who, don't have dads hurt. And very frequently, boys who hurt us, meaning that, almost all the mass shootings are boys with minimal or no father involvement. And all the ISIS recruits, not all of them, but about 95% of the ISIS recruits are boys or girls with minimal or no father involvement, what I call dad-deprived boys and dad-deprived girls.
So how do you call it a crisis? How do you begin to resolve it?
Well, I call it a crisis because it is a crisis of education and unemployment and physical health and mental health. Obviously, school shootings and mass shootings are crises of mental health, and the drug overdose, as you probably know, boys are dying. Boys' life expectancy has gone down in this past couple of years. Girls' life expectancy has remained the same, but that's in itself a problem, that girls' life expectancy has only remained the same, but the fact that boys have gone down and the gap between boys and girls, male and female life expectancy has increased, this is really a significant problem. But solutions-wise, there's many solutions. One is dad involvement, and that's the number one solution that we can do a great deal about very easily, because millions of dads are begging all over the world to be more involved with their children. Often after divorce, men, we assume that women have the right to the children, and men often have to fight for children, and that's not good for the woman who has all the responsibilities of the children and often a job on her shoulders, and it's not good for the father who feels like he has no purpose, and it's bad for the daughter who often has who, when she grows up without a father, often has children outside of wedlock and as a teenager, which is usually for the wrong reasons. And boys who have minimal or no father involvement, dad deprived boys, have problems in more than 70 different areas. So
let me ask
number
you,
one, yes, go ahead,
Warren. Yeah, are you saying there's like a court bias in favor of women getting custody, and so
yes,
men are kind of shut out?
The bias works two ways. Almost every judge, male or female, feels that children do better after divorce with both parents. But when the mom is far more likely to come to the court and say, I'm afraid of my father, the father, I don't think, or he's not a good father, or I want to be able to get a job. I've met a new man, and I'd like him to be the stepfather, and he lives in a different state, and I'd like to move to where he's located. They have a good school system, and I want to start over again, so I want to be able to move out of the state and have a good source of income with this new man, or get a job there myself. And so, I want either those rights or those options in life, or alternatively, I'm afraid of the father. And if the woman just expresses in court that she has fear, even if that fear is just that, he shouted at her a few times, or they got into shouting matches a few times, and she just wanted hands off and wanted to start her life over again. Under those circumstances, the courts are enormously biased in favor of the mom having the right to the children and the father not being considered, having to prove himself and having to. So, I do a lot of expert witness work around the country at this stage in children's lives where the mom is saying she wants to do some of those types of things I just mentioned, it's really hard to convince the court to update the court on the extraordinary data that we have, that children of divorce do best when four things are happening. Number one is that they have an equal amount of time with the mom and dad. Number two is that the dad and mom live within about 20 minutes drive time of each other, so that the children don't resent the father or the mother whose house they're going to that takes them away from a sports activity or their children. A classmate's birthday party. And number three, that there's no bad mouthing from mother to father or father to mother that the children can detect or overhear. And number four, that the children have about a significant amount of that the parents of the children have a significant amount of relationship counseling or couples communication counseling. If those four things happen after divorce, the children have a reasonably good opportunity to do almost as well as they would in an intact family. But if one or two of those things is missing, then the children are definitely in jeopardy, but especially the boy without the father.
Wow. Yeah, I used to be a lawyer for many years.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, I did a lot of, you know, I didn't do family law, but I did a lot of early in my career criminal defense, and a lot of court appointments with the public defender's office, and the I mean, so part of this crisis in different deprived groups, minority groups, it just seemed that most of the defendants that, you know, for years I was in court almost every day, and most of the defendants were, probably 90% of them were minority groups. And so are you saying that, is that a cultural thing because of economics or you know, socioeconomic factors as much as so much of a boy crisis or male role model or sort of, because a lot of them did have, a lot of their role models were people that were in prison themselves. So I, you know, it's kind of,
Absolutely.
so it's it, you kind of have both things going on, and it's just that their role models were in prison, or they were, you know, the American dream. For them, there was really no American dream. It just seemed ridiculous, unless maybe they were an athlete or, you know, athletes. Go
You're
ahead.
absolutely right, and it is a boy crisis in the sense that 93% of the prison population is males, but what and many people know that, but what they don't know is that that more than 90% of that male population is boys with minimal or basically dad-deprived boys, usually boys whose fathers have been in prison, or boys whose father and mother were divorced, or boys who are ch children of single moms. And so in those three categories, those boys do terribly, usually terribly in school. But also what very few people know is that moms and dads have different styles of parenting aside from the role models. Moms are much more likely to, so for example, both moms and dads will set boundaries the same way. They'll say, sweetie, you can't have your ice cream until you finish your peas. And children will test boundaries the same way. They'll probably have, you know, try to have a few peas as possible, and then negotiate the ice cream deal after a few peas. And
Right.
so the setting and the testing of boundaries are very similar. The difference is in the way that moms and dads enforce boundaries. So mom, you know, when the child has says, you know, says I had a few peas, can I have my ice cream now? Moms will tend to say something like, well, I'll tell you what, have a few more peas and then you can have your ice cream. So she doesn't force the child to finish the peas. She negotiates a different deal than the original deal of finishing the peas. So the child learns, I can with mom, I can manipulate a better deal because mom is saying to herself, you know, gee, it's been a tough day. Am I going to get into a big argument over a few peas? I don't think so. That's insensitive. Whereas the dad is far more likely to say, excuse me. We had a deal here. The deal here is that you finish your peas before you get your ice cream. And the kid may whine and say, you're so mean. And the dad will say something like, well, you know, you can continue to whine and complain, and then there'll be no ice cream tomorrow night either. And the child with the father is far more likely to then finish, ultimately know that in the future, she or he has no option but to finish the peas. So what the child, what the dad is learning is postponed gratification. And they're also learning to focus their attention as opposed to having an attention deficit. So you're with a child that learns to focus the attention. Children raised predominantly by dads, only 15% of them have ADHD. Children raised predominantly by moms, 30% have ADHD. And one of the reasons you can see in that example is that the child raised by the mom doesn't have to focus on finishing the peas, and therefore the attention has a deficit. Because the attention is wandering from finishing the peas to manipulating a better deal where it doesn't have to have as many peas. Whereas the child with the dad, in order to get that ice cream, has to focus on finishing the peas. So the attention has to be focused rather than being able to wander and be rewarded for wandering. And the importance of that is that without that postponed gratification, the child then goes to school and can't finish homework, gets distracted by a text, can't rehearse if it, maybe he's a tall boy and he really has an aspiration to be on, in the NBA. Well, he can't even go, he can't even pay attention to rehearsing the drills. Again and again, all success requires a lot of discipline and a lot of postponed gratification. And so he then becomes disappointed that he's not on the, on the basketball team, and he's not, he gets bad grades and teachers don't praise him as much. And when it comes to boy-girl time, the girls go out with winners, not losers. And so then he starts withdrawing into porn, because porn is access to a variety of attractive women without fear of rejection at a price he can afford. And so, but then he becomes addicted to the porn, which makes him, you know, girls more repulsed by him. And then that that makes him go back to withdrawing into the porn or into the video games. And you have a whole cycle, which in its worst-case scenario leads to depression and suicide, and its super worst-case scenario can lead to a mass shooting or a school shooting. And so that's an example of the slippery slope that happens when a father is not significantly involved.
So let me ask you a question. We started to talk about it earlier. I talked about, like, what are solutions, and I know one was, I guess, was through the court system to have better education of more, almost lobbying for more equal parenting roles. But what are some other ways to, we have this? I mean, also, like, I saw here that boys drop out of high school at double the rate of girls, and young men only account for 40% of recent university graduates. So, how do you reverse these trends, or what is the solution that you advocate?
No, I advocate in the Boy Crisis book maybe 100 or so solutions, but some of them are, one, obviously one is getting fathers more involved. Number two, in order to get that to happen, a few things are very helpful. One is understanding the differences between dad-style parenting and mom-style parenting, and understanding that the children that do the best have what I call checks and balance parenting. That is, mom is saying this is what's best, and dad's saying this is what's best, and, you know, mom is saying the child should not climb the tree, or the child should have the peas right away, and dad is saying something the other way around, and the parents work it through and work it out, and, you know, come to some type of resolution that's appropriate for each situation. And so once dads know that they're really involved in the process, then dads tend to stick around. When dads leave the family situation, it's often because they feel like they are not being paid attention to, acknowledged, and integrated. And so the only thing that they're worth in the family is to make money. And if they can't make money as well as they'd like to, then they feel like they have no role. And so they end up withdrawing either psychologically or physically. And so number two would be understanding the value and contribution that fathers make. Number three would be getting, one of the reasons that we have a boy crisis is because we have a lot of divorces, and one of the reasons we have a lot of divorces is because people don't know, men and women and couples, parents do not know how to communicate effectively. Most, the Achilles heel of almost all people, human beings, is our inability to handle personal criticism without becoming defensive, and we are not teaching
anyone how
to do that. That's for sure.
That's for sure. Yeah, I mean, oh my God. I always
see Republicans, Democrats, Israelis, Arabs, mothers or fathers. It's universal.
No, I know. And, you know, try to teach people, you know, not to take things personally, but, you know, it's easier said than done.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
I believe
people should take things personally and understand that, you know, if a mother or father says, you know, your husband or whatever says to you, dad, mom, or, you know, husband, wife, you are doing this way, it's fine to hear that personally, but we have to, you know, one of the reasons I do couples workshops all around the country is because there is a, you have to be able to take personal criticism that is directed at you personally and be able to know that if you provide a safe environment for the person who's criticizing you, that they will feel heard and safe with you, and therefore they will feel more love for you and more love from you. And that there is, but that's a biologically unnatural thing to do. It takes me a full weekend to train couples to be able to do that effectively. But once you have, once you know the tools to do that, you can then provide that safe environment for your partners upset with you. And then from that safe environment, you, your partner and you feel much closer together, and you're more likely to be able to be on the same page when it comes to raising your children. And then therefore much less likely to get divorced, and therefore much more likely to have the father involved, and therefore much less likely to have a boy crisis.
Well, so what I'm hearing you, because we're kind of winding down on our time here, and but what I'm hearing is that it sounds like it's really about relationships, about male, about primary parenting relationships, about couples.
That's one of the most important steps.
Yeah.
And then if so I don't leave women with, who are raising children by themselves without any options. We need to persuade our schools to hire more male teachers so the boy doesn't go from a female-only home to a female-dominated school. We need to, if all of those are not happening, we need to be able to get our boys involved with sports. We need to get them involved with...
Yeah, you know, one thought I had is I mentioned that my younger daughter is a teacher. And, you know, my understanding is that it isn't that the schools don't want male teachers. It's that, you know, a lot of men are just not interested in being an elementary teacher.
They aren't.
It's a matter of manner.
Yes, we have to. Men will do anything that we ask them to do if we tell them they're needed. Men in every generation has had its war, and every generation we've said, you know, Uncle Sam needs you, and some men were willing to die because they felt that they had some people desired them, they needed them. If we change the cultural attitude toward men are needed as teachers, male role models are needed, there's a deficit of men in the home, we need them in the school, and then we allow men to bring their style of teaching into the school, which would involve less protection and more risk-taking and more you know, monitoring of the risk-taking and processing it and so on, that's when we would bring, we start giving scholarships to men who go to schools to become teachers, just like we used to give scholarships. You know, West Point was free for people who wanted to, who got into West Point, and you just made a commitment to be in the service for 2 years afterwards. You start making that type of commitment for males as teachers, and until schools get that type of option, until there is an equal number of male and female elementary school teachers.
Wow. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. Warren Farrell, the author of The Boy Crisis, is our guest. And Warren, how do people get a hold of you, get your books, and get a hold of you, and tell us about some of the current workshops that you're doing that are available?
Sure. At the moment, I am. If you go to Amazon and search for The Boy Crisis, it's they just put it on sale at a third off, so this is a good time to buy that. If you have a little bit of income of your own, that's a bit more than that, and you can support the local bookstore. You know, ask the bookstore to order The Boy Crisis, or you can look me up at warrenferrell.com. That's not Will Ferrell, the comedian, but Warren Ferrell.
Right, exactly.
.com,
right.
And or The Boy Crisis itself has theboycrisis.org as a website. And the couples communication workshops, the next one I'm doing is at 1440 Multiversity in Santa Cruz, which is a wonderful venue, and then another one back in the East Coast, if the program covers the East Coast, I think it does, at Omega Institute. And the couples workshops are both of them. Oh, wonderful.
Actually, my daughter's partner, He just mentioned Multiversity. They live down in Santa Cruz.
So oh, neat. I'll tell him about Multiversity is a wonderful venue.
Yeah.
And so if you
what is the name of that? When is that workshop going to be?
The one at 1440 Multiversity is February 8th through 10th, the weekend before Valentine's Day. And then if you just look up warrenfarrell.com, my website, and then go to Couples Communication or where Warren will be, all of my couples workshops that I'm doing are listed there. And so that's a little bit of background about where you can get a hold of me. By the way, my email is warren@warrenfarrell.com, and I answer all my emails, which takes a lot of time, but it's something that I care a lot about.
Wow. Well, Warren, thank you so much for being my guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. Time flew by. Great information, and I want to thank you and acknowledge you for your commitment to really helping not just men but all people about by having better relationships and your wisdom and knowing that it's really where it starts is for people to get along better, especially men and women. So thanks again, Warren Farrell, for being our guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. And each week we have other people that are going to enlighten us. And until the meantime, journey on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure
thank you.
Listening to your thoughts and dialoguing with you.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for listening. I hope you feel inspired to take the next step in your life. And if you haven't already, please take the time to visit my website at inspirepossibility.com and discover the various services and products we offer that could just very well change your life.